Welcome back to WCULA Operation Pass NCLEX. We are in week three of spring 2021, and hopefully we'll start to see the bad luck that 2020 has brought us start to fall behind here soon. Just a couple of reminders. If you are a graduate student, you should be looking out for the BRN approval so you could schedule your NCLEX as quickly as possible. If you have your BRN approval and have scheduled your NCLEX, if you are farther than 120 days out from the date of graduation, you need to contact myself, Sasha McKee, Debbie Reed, or Joan Wheeler and find out what your options are for refreshers. 120 days out or more puts you at a high risk of not passing your NCLEX. If you're a 493 student, you should be progressing along nicely in your capstone. Congratulations, you guys are almost done. We've only got a couple of more weeks. Make sure that you aren't losing track of the goal during your countdown. If you're a 480 student, you guys are the first to do the capstone in 480. You guys have been patient and have been working diligently, and for that, we thank you. Just a little bit longer, and you guys will be in your final term. For the remainder of our WCU students, welcome to spring one, welcome to 2021, and let's cross our fingers and hope that 2021 sees the return of on-ground teaching as well as clinicals. We have with us today Elena Breiger, one of our nursing academic specialists, with a little bit of information on EKGs, how to read, how to interpret, and what they mean.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to today's podcast. My name is Elena Breiger, and I'm a nursing academic specialist at the Los Angeles campus here at West Coast University. Today's topic is EKGs. This is actually one of my favorite topics, and I've been a pediatric cardiac ICU nurse for the last 12 years. When I was a new grad, I was just taught to memorize morphologies and algorithms. And while there are some morphologies and algorithms that you definitely need to know, I didn't feel like I had a great knowledge of EKGs, and that mostly just came with experience. But there's a lot of neat tricks and good things that you can know to help identify EKGs that can help you figure out what's going on, what's wrong with the patient, and what you need to do about it. First, I want to talk about the heart's pacemakers. So the primary pacemaker of the heart is the SA node, but there's some backup pacemakers as well. One way to help remember this is with the acronym SWEET apples have a big price. So the S for SWEET stands for the SA node, and that internal rate is 60 to 100 beats per minute. So again, the SA node is the main pacemaker of the heart. The A for apples stands for AV node. That is the backup pacemaker of the heart, the primary backup pacemaker of the heart, and that rate is 40 to 60 beats per minute. The H stands for have, and sweet apples have a big price, so that stands for the His bundles, and that rate is 20 to 40 beats per minute. The B for big is bundle branches. That rate is also 20 to 40 beats per minute. And then the P for price is the Purkinje fibers. That rate is 20 to 40 beats per minute as well, and that's the backup to the backup pacemaker. Okay, so once again, that's sweet apples have a big price. The next thing we want to know is what we're actually looking at when we're looking at an EKG. What do all these different waves that we're looking at mean? So first we have the P wave, and that's caused by atrial depolarization resulting in contraction of the atria and sending blood from the atria into the ventricles. This is the initiation of the electrical charge. Next is the PR interval. This is measured from the beginning of the P wave to the beginning of the QRS complex. This represents the time of electrical transit from the SA node to fire, go through the AV node, pause there, and then continue its transit to the ventricles. Okay, so the QRS complex is caused by ventricular depolarization, which makes the ventricles contract. Since these are the biggest chambers, it creates the biggest wave in millivolts, so along the vertical axis, but the complex is narrow along the horizontal axis because ideally the ventricle should be contracting efficiently, quickly, and strongly, resulting in a relatively narrow QRS complex. After the QRS complex is the J point. The J point represents the beginning of the ST segment. The ST segment is measured from the end of the QRS to the beginning of the T wave and represents the heart's resting period. It should be level with the baseline, which indicates that this ST segment is isoelectric. The T wave indicates a ventricular repolarization or relaxation and refilling of blood volume into the ventricles. As a side note, atrial repolarization also occurs, but it's not necessarily represented by a wave in the EKG, or maybe it's masked by another wave in the EKG. So atrial repolarization is occurring, but we're not necessarily seeing it in a specific wave like we are with everything else. Lastly, the QT interval is the beginning of the QRS complex to the end of the T wave. That represents the total time for ventricular depolarization or contraction and ventricular repolarization or relaxation. Next, we want to know how we can actually measure an EKG strip when we're looking at a strip. So along the horizontal axis, each mini box is 0.04 seconds. And the larger, darker box is made up of 5 mini boxes and therefore is 0.2 seconds along the horizontal axis. Across the vertical axis, or up and down, each mini box is 1 millivolt, and the larger, darker box is therefore 5 millivolts since it's made up of 5 mini boxes. Now I'm going to teach you how to interpret an EKG strip in 8 steps. So first, we want to look at the rhythm. Is it regular or irregular? That means when we're looking at the R waves, are they about evenly spaced out apart? So we can analyze the EKG strip and use this in the caliper, or we can kind of eyeball to guesstimate if we don't have a lot of time. Next, we want to determine the rate. So we want to look at the atrial rate as well as the ventricular rate. So the atrial rate is, again, represented by P waves. So we want to count up all the P waves. And then the ventricular rate is counted by the R wave. So again, we want to count up all the QRS complexes. And then we want to see if there's one-to-one conduction between them. So for examples, does a QRS complex occur after every P wave? Are they evenly spaced out every time? R waves is the peak of the QRS complex, and we can figure this out easily by multiplying this by 10. So remember, a standard EKG strip is 6 seconds. So as we count up the P waves and as we count up the R waves, and we multiply it by 10. Again, for a good healthy sinus rhythm, this would be the same ideally, and that's a good way to identify where the problem is if it's not the same. It only works for regular rhythms. If you have an irregular rhythm, you can't just count up the R waves on the regular strip and multiply it by 10. You're going to have to use a different method. Next, we want to look for the P wave. Is it present? Is it normal? Is it inverted? Next, we want to look at the PR interval. So the PR interval is less than 0.2 seconds, or 5 small boxes, or 1 larger box. We want to know if this is prolonged or lengthening. If it is, then that might indicate a heart block. If it's slow or if it's increasingly prolonged, then we know that the problem is with the communication between the SA and AV nodes. Next, we want to measure the QR complex. This should be less than 0.12 seconds or 3 small boxes. If it's wider, then it means we have a slow conduction through the ventricles and it's inefficiently pumping subsequently. Next, we want to look at the QT interval. A normal range for the QT interval is between 0.36 and 0.44 seconds. We're looking again for efficiency. If our QT interval is prolonged, it indicates that the heart's electrical conductivity is trying to contract the ventricle that is still trying to relax. If you find that your patient has a prolonged QT interval, then you want to look at the meds and look back at their baseline EKGs. Next, we look at the ST segment. If the ST segment is elevated by more than 2 millivolts or more than two small boxes on the vertical axis, it indicates a probable ischemia or infarction. So those could be our STEMIs. Now that we know the normal ranges of the QRS complex, QT interval, and PR interval, anything outside of those normal ranges indicates a problem. And now we know exactly where the problem is and what that problem means for the heart. This is a great place to start when you're learning your EKG rhythms. Normal sinus rhythm is 60 to 100 beats per minute as set by our primary pacemaker, the SA node. Any sinus rhythm that is below 60 beats per minute, by definition, is bradycardia. Any sinus rhythm that is above 100 beats per minute is, by definition, sinus tachycardia. Next, we have to think about our interventions. Once we've identified a problem in our EKG strip, we have to know as nurses what we're going to do about it. The best first step is to continue to assess the patient. Is your patient stable? Do they have a pulse? If the patient doesn't have a pulse, then you start CPR. I've definitely seen a beautiful sinus rhythm in a patient that had a permanent pacemaker placed while the person was pulseless. And if you didn't check, then you might think that that patient was in normal sinus rhythm, right? So if the patient does have a pulse and you want to gather the rest of your vital signs, assess their level of consciousness, and get a blood pressure. Since before we discussed medications that may prolong a QT interval, I just want to discuss some of the common ones. There are a lot of different med categories that can prolong QT intervals, and this is especially present when the patient is on polypharmacy. A lot of these medications are commonly used and you'll see them often and you need to know. If you identify that your patient's asymptomatic but has a prolonged QT interval, you should notify the provider and review the medications. Some of these common medications include antiarrhythmics like amiodarone and procainamide, antimicrobials like levofloxacin, erythromycin, or ciprofloxacin, antidepressants like amitriptyline, antipsychotics like haloperidol and quetiapine, and other meds like diphenhydramine or Benadryl, sumatriptan, methadone, and ondansetron, especially again when there's polypharmacy involved. Thank you so much for attending this podcast of EKGs Part 1. I'll hope to see you back again next time. Hi there and welcome back. Thank you for tuning into this podcast. My name is Elena Bregier and I'm a nursing academic specialist at West Coast University, LA, and this is the second podcast on EKGs. After reviewing the basics of pacemakers, electrical wave interpretation, and strip measurements in the first EKG lecture, I do want to touch on some of the most common arrhythmias, how to identify them, expected treatments, and interventions. To review, in normal sinus rhythm, the heart's primary pacemaker is the SA node, and the inherent rate is 60 to 100 beats per minute. P waves are present, consistent, and upright before the QRS. Atrial and ventricular conduction is at a 1-to-1 ratio. The PR interval is normal at 0.12 to 0.2 seconds. QRS is normal at 0.04 seconds to 0.12 seconds. The QT interval is also normal at less than 0.46 seconds, and the ST segment is isoelectric. In sinus bradycardia, all of these intervals remain in the normal range, and the pacemaker is still the SA node. However, the heart rate is 59 beats per minute or less. Treatment for sinus bradycardia is only necessary if the patient is symptomatic or unstable, in which case atropine is the drug of choice. The MD must be present at the bedside for the nurse to administer atropine. In sinus tachycardia, the intervals all remain within the normal range, and the pacemaker is also still the SA node. However, sinus tachycardia meets all these criteria with a heart rate of 101 beats per minute or more. Treatment for sinus tachycardia is to treat the underlying cause, which may include but is not limited to pain, dehydration, fever, anemia, stress, anxiety, or exercise. In atrial fibrillation, or AFib, the ventricular rhythm is often irregular, meaning that the R waves, or the peak of the QRS complex, occurs at irregular intervals. There is no atrial rate, meaning that P waves are not present. Since P waves do not precede the QRS like normal, then we know that the problem lies within the atria. Thus, the arrhythmia is being named after the part of the heart where the problem is initially occurring. In atrial fibrillation, no atrial contraction occurs. It looks like its hallmark fibrillatory wave pattern in between the QRS complexes. PR intervals are not measurable. If the patient is stable, then antiarrhythmics like cardizem, metoprolol, or amiodarone are given. Since fibrillatory dysrhythmia can cause the patients to throw blood clots, anticoagulation therapy is always prescribed. While anticoagulation does not treat the underlying arrhythmia, it does help to prevent the most devastating consequences of this arrhythmia. Next, we're going to talk about atrial flutter. In atrial flutter, a conduction ratio does exist. However, the atrial to ventricular conduction is not 1:1. It may be something like 2:1, 3:1, 4:1, or even 5:1. QRS intervals are typically within normal range and regular. However, there is no true P wave, but instead the hallmark sawtooth or flutter pattern. If the patient is stable, we give cardizem, metoprolol, or amiodarone. If the patient is unstable, then cardioversion is most appropriate. Supraventricular tachycardia, or SVT, is a term used to describe all narrow, non-sinus tachycardias with rates greater than 150 beats per minute. To review, non-sinus means that the pacemaker is not the SA node. And in the case, the pacemaker is usually some ectopic supraventricular site. If the patient is stable, then the first line of treatment is vagal maneuvers. If SVT persists, 6 milligrams of adenosine is administered via rapid IV push and rapid flush. If it is still unsuccessful and SVT still persists, then the same drug administration technique is repeated, but using a 12 milligram dose of adenosine. Next, I'd like to talk about AV blocks. In AV blocks, the electrical signal from the AV node is blocked, meaning that you will notice that the electrical disturbance is where it transits from the atria to the ventricles, or between the P waves and the QRS complex on an EKG strip. In first degree AV block, P waves are present, QRS are normal, and conduction is still 1:1. All of the elements of the normal EKG are there, with the identifying feature of a prolonged PR interval. In first degree AV block, the PR interval is greater than 0.2 seconds and it is consistent and constant. Treatment for this dysrhythmia includes monitoring and review of medications that may prolong AV conduction, such as beta blockers and calcium channel blockers. Second degree AV block, Mobitz type 1, also known as Winckelbach, is characterized by an irregular rhythm with a progressively lengthening PR interval, followed by a dropped QRS. After the QRS is dropped, then the cycle of progressively lengthening PR intervals begins again. Treatment for this dysrhythmia includes monitoring if they're asymptomatic and addressing the underlying cause, and a review of medications, which once again are your beta blockers and calcium channel blockers, as well as digoxin. In second degree AV block Mobitz type 2, the PR interval is normal and constant. The rhythm is identified by a faster atrial rate than ventricular rate, which manifests as more Ps than QRSs. The intervention for this dysrhythmia is pacemaker if symptomatic, or treating the underlying cause if not. These underlying causes might include myocarditis, MI, hyperkalemia, or digoxin toxicity. In third-degree heart block or complete heart block, both atrial and ventricular rhythms are regular but completely independent of each other. There is no electrical communication between the atria and the ventricles. Therefore, no intervals are measurable. The patient needs a pacemaker and epicardial pacing until they can be redlined to the OR for permanent pacemaker placement. The next arrhythmia I want to touch on is ventricular tachycardia, or VTAC, which is defined as a rate of over 100 beats per minute, or more than 3 PVCs consecutively. In VTAC, the QRS complex is wide and bizarre, but regular. If this patient has a pulse, synchronized cardioversion is required. If the patient is pulseless, then we obviously start high-quality CPR, and then we defibrillate. Next, I want to talk about ventricular fibrillation, or VFib. This is a disorganized and chaotic electrical activity appearing as coarse fibrillatory waves. Unlike atrial fibrillation, there are no QRS complexes, which is how you can recognize this one versus the other. And there's also no other measurable intervals in this dysrhythmia. VFib requires high-quality CPR followed by immediate defibrillation. Remember, defib the VFib. The next dysrhythmia is torsades, which literally translates to twisting about the point. This rhythm is polymorphic and can start out as regular, transition into irregular, and usually has some component of VTAC within its polymorphology. If the patient has a pulse, you can expect to administer a bolus of magnesium sulfate via IV piggyback. If the patient is pulseless, then initiate high-quality CPR, and then IV piggyback mag sulfate. Last but not least, we have asystole. Asystole is identified by the flat line. There is no electrical activity on this EKG strip whatsoever. Asystole requires you as the bedside nurse to immediately initiate high-quality CPR and call a code in the inpatient setting. During the code, other rescuers will arrive. You can expect to administer epinephrine during the resuscitation. Remember, asystole is never a shockable rhythm. Finally, you can expect to review the H's and T's at some point during the code. The six H's are hypovolemia, hypoxia, hydrogen ions or acidosis, hyperkalemia, hypokalemia, and hypothermia. The four T's are toxins, tamponade, thrombosis, and tension pneumothorax. My recommendation to you is to find visual examples of each of these arrhythmias to view as you consider what we discussed here. This combination will really help you identify the strips on an exam, as well as correctly answer test questions and identify priority interventions. Thanks for tuning in and happy studying.
Thank you so much, Elena. It was enlightening and wonderful, and it was great to hear your voice, as always. We will see you guys next week with our new episode of WCU LA Operation Pass NCLEX.